The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob Frantz on AM 1420, The Answer.
Welcome indeed. It is good to have you here with us at 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock on this Monday morning, the very first morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024. Wow. I had a fantastic couple of days off. Just kind of had an extended weekend celebrating the Easter weekend, the Holy Easter weekend with my family. Down in Tennessee, I really, really enjoyed that time off. I want to say thank you before we get rolling to Peter Kersenow for stepping in for me and filling the gap. He was here on Thursday and Friday. I didn't hear it because I was in Tennessee, but I know Pete, and I'm sure it was amazing. He did warn me. Of course, he'd actually texted me after Thursday's show. I don't know what happened on Friday, but he texted me after Thursday's show saying, quote, FCC just called. The station's license is being reviewed. I'll keep you updated. That's a text. I'm hopeful that we get a favorable review. I will be honest with you when I say that I am never really truly in fear that our license is in jeopardy when Peter fills in any more than I am when I do my daily show, to be 100% honest with you. Sometimes it's very, very hard to restrain and pull back and try to be, a little bit more responsible when some of the things that we have going on that we face in our country and in our culture are so extraordinarily dangerous and just and egregious. So thank you to Peter. And thank you to Seth, by the way, for working, too, on Friday, which was a company holiday, of course, being Good Friday. And thanks to him and thanks to everybody else who was a part of it. And thanks to you for listening each and every day. Got a big show today for you coming up in a half an hour. We're going to talk to Congressman Jim Jordan, as we always do, about what is going on. We'll talk about yesterday's attack on Christianity. That's exactly what it was, by holding the quote-unquote transgender day of visibility on Easter Sunday. It is just a straight-up middle finger given to us by Joseph R. Biden and everybody else in the left-wing administration to American Christians, particularly to the Christian right, whom they know defends children and believes that people suffering from psychological conditions should be treated for the psychological conditions, not have their bodies mutilated. That's just the reality of it all. Yesterday, Joe Biden said, blank you to all Christians, while he continues to pretend to be one himself. It's really quite astounding. We're going to talk to Jim Jordan a little bit about that. Excuse me. We're going to talk at 10:10 with radio host and entrepreneur Darvio Moro, who wrote a piece for Newsweek celebrating not just this particular win, but kind of suggesting it's happening all over the country, and I'm very, very glad to see that, and that's why we're going to talk to him. The win by Mike O'Malley in the primary a couple of weeks ago over Matthew Ahn, who is the radical far-left Soros acolyte-type progressive who would turn the city of Cleveland and Oligarch County into Portland or Seattle or San Francisco or any of the other godforsaken hellholes that have just descended into pits of crime because their prosecutors don't believe in either cops or jails or prisons. So Darvio wrote a piece headlined, "Moderates are beating the progressives in liberal cities. Here's how they're doing it." And Darvio, by the way, is no, you know, conservative. When I say that, I don't mean to say that he is a liberal or a leftist either. I think he is a moderate, which is why he is celebrating this. So he's the CEO of the FCB radio network, as well as I say, he's an entrepreneur and host. We're going to talk to him about this at 10:10. And then at, let's see, at what time are we looking at? 10:35, we are going to be talking with Pastor Blakely, and that's going to be, well, I'll save a little bit of the preview for that till we get a little bit closer, because it's not going to make a lot of sense right now anyway. Okay, so here's what I want to do. It's 9-11. We need to get to the top 9 at 9, but first let's pledge. Patriots, go ahead and stand and face your flag. Put your hand on your heart and join us for the pledge. If you are a left-wing lunatic who does not believe in the glory of this country, then don't fake it. We'd rather be able to identify you by your actions. So go ahead and take a knee like the good little Marxist that you are. For the rest of us,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Apologize, by the way, to Pastor Staley, Jim Staley, who's going to be joining us. He's their director of Passion for Truth Ministries. We'll get into that, like I said, at 10:35. I gave the wrong name there, so my apologies for that. But now,
it's 9 o'clock. Do you know where your headlines are? We do. It's time for the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio.
Yeah, and we're loaded up today, as you can imagine, after this extraordinary weekend. In fact, the top three of the Top 9 at 9 are all related to yesterday.
Number 1.
Joe Biden put out a statement before Easter Sunday yesterday, reading in part, quote, "On Transgender Day of Visibility, we celebrate the joy, strength, and absolute courage of some of the bravest people I know." I'm going to pause there, just to give you a moment to clean up your own retching. "Today, we show millions of transgender and non-binary Americans that we see them, they belong." Yes, they do. In freaking therapy. That's where they belong. There is no such thing as a non-binary person. And if there is a transgender person, it is a psychological disorder that deserves compassionate care and therapy. He went on to say they should be treated with dignity and respect. Yes, and counseling and intense psychotherapy. That's how they should be treated. Secretary of State Antony Blinken followed suit, stating, "Transgender Day of Visibility is a celebration of the courage and resilience of transgender, non-binary, and gender non-conforming persons, otherwise known as completely mentally and psychologically suffering people who need compassionate psychotherapy, not puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and surgeries." A trans activist and therapist named Rachel Crandall Crocker is the person, this is a male, by the way, who invented Trans Day of Visibility. He says he chose March 31st because he wanted some distance from Transgender Day of Remembrance, which is November 20th. Did you know there's that? As well as Pride Month, which is in June. Imagine being so oppressed and marginalized that you have to figure out how to space out all the days on the calendar that celebrate you. And imagine being a president who is so devoted to his political base that he's willing to sacrifice the most holy day on the Christian calendar, Easter Sunday this year, to celebrate this insanity. So it's just a reminder, and we're going to call this a public service to all, and especially children. Let's bring a little clarity here.
Boys are boys from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Girls are girls right from the start. Everybody's fancy. everybody's fine. Your body's fancy, and so is mine. Only girls can be the mummies. Only boys can grow up and be the daddies. Yes, sir, everybody's fancy. Everybody's fine. Your body's fancy, and so is mine.
I hope that clarifies things for those who still remain just extraordinarily confused. What do you say we move on?
Number two.
But not really, because number two, not only did President Biden yesterday declare Easter Sunday as Transgender Day of Visibility, he also banned religious-themed Easter egg designs at the White House Easter egg roll event. How very Catholic of him, on the holiest day in the Christian calendar, to have an Easter egg fun event at the White House, which is traditional and has been going on for decades and decades and decades, but telling the kids, by the way, if you even think about God, if you even think about the risen Christ on this Easter Sunday, Transgender Day of Visibility, you will be booted from the art contest. I wish I was making that up, but I'm not. Flyers distributed for the contest stated that, quote, Easter egg design submissions, quote, must not include any questionable content or religious symbols or overtly religious themes among the restrictions on the Easter egg hunt. Can you? I don't know how this guy can continue to call himself a Christian, much less a Catholic. All right.
Number three.
Speaking of the attack on Christianity, yesterday, demonstrators demanding a ceasefire in Gaza, in other words, pro-Palestinian and pro-Hamas protesters, interrupted an Easter vigil mass at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City before they were removed from the service. Three protesters arrested after disrupting Easter services. Video of the incident shows six protesters at the front of the church holding up a banner reading "Silence equals death" before being quickly escorted out by security. A reporter on the scene said, quote, quite literally, nothing is sacred any longer. When St. Patrick's Cathedral can't celebrate Easter in peace, you know we are a nation in decline. It was a mistake to let the anarchy of 2020 happen with impunity. End quote. He is exactly right. That this is what we have wrought back in 2020 by allowing the entire country to riot and burn without any charges or accountability whatsoever. This is the new normal.
Number four.
Progressive Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer is facing a little bit of heat after suggesting, imagine this, a program that will give illegal immigrants $500 a month in rental assistance. Now you might say, well, that's a nice gesture, and maybe it is, but I wonder how many Americans in the impoverished city of Detroit, for example, could use such assistance. But it doesn't count. They don't count because they're not illegal aliens. Whitmer offered Michigan landlords a newcomer rental subsidy, is what she's calling it, to house illegal aliens who are facing deportation. She is facing backlash also for that, referring to them as newcomers. The newcomer rental subsidy program provides refugees and other newcomer population-eligible households. So in other words, suffering, impoverished Michiganders, the hell with you, but we're giving money to the illegals who just arrived who are going to be moving in next to you. Provide them with rental assistance, $500 a month up to 12 months with eligibility based on immigration status and household income. 91,000 illegals have invaded Michigan, according to data, with most coming from Mexico and China. In December, state officials estimate a 40% increase in illegal aliens coming to Michigan in 2024. The Michigan Republicans there, concerned about the rental subsidy program, their concerns were heightened when an illegal alien who had been deported in 2020 re-entered the country and came up and murdered a 25-year-old woman in Grand Rapids. But there you have it. That is Democrat policy in action.
Number five.
President Joe Biden is reportedly now spending hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars to fund border security in foreign countries, even as the U.S.-Mexico border sees record-breaking crossings every day. Biden signed that $1.2 trillion budget last week that far too many Republicans voted for, by the way. It included $380 million for enhanced border security projects in Egypt, Jordan, Lebanon, Oman, and Tunisia. $150 million of that $380 million must go to the border security in Jordan. Meanwhile, in fiscal years 2022 and 2023, under the Biden administration watch, over 2 million illegal immigrants were apprehended at the southern border each year, with 140,000 known gotaways. House Homeland Security Chairman Mark Green said the number of gotaways being recorded is underestimated by at least 20%. So while our border falls apart, the Biden administration given $380 million to other countries to secure their borders. That's right. Have you had enough yet? Are you angry enough yet? Are you going to remember this come November?
Number six.
Most fast food workers in California, yes, your fry dunkers, your burger flippers, are going to be being paid at least $20 an hour. After a new law kicks in today, this morning, not an April Fool's joke, by the way, giving more financial security to what is considered a historically low-paying profession. Many getting a 25% pay raise. I could use 25% pay raise. How about you? But the pay also threatens to raise prices in a state already known for its high cost of living. You think? Welcome to the land of the $26 burger. Enjoy your stay in California. Workers there, by the way, say it still doesn't go far enough. But business owners like Alex Johnson, who owns 10 Auntie Anne's Pretzels and Cinnabon restaurants in the San Francisco Bay Area, he said he has already had to lay off staff, and he's relying on parents to help with payroll and human resources. His parents to help with payroll and human resources. He said this increase in minimum wage will cost him an additional $470,000 a year. So he has to raise prices, probably about 15% on all of his items at his stores, which is going to hurt business. And he's going to have to lay off some of the workers that he already has because he can't afford to pay them all $20 an hour. Well done, California Democrats.
Number seven.
Closer to home, the ACLU of Ohio announced on Friday that it filed a lawsuit on behalf of abortion providers, a.k.a. baby killers, across our state, challenging state law that says women must wait a minimum of 24 hours after an in-person medical consultation before getting an abortion. Under current state law, abortions may be performed or induced at least 24 hours prior to patients consulting with a physician about the procedure, among other paperwork-related requirements. The ACLU says the state's current law is unconstitutional following the passage of Issue 1 last November when voters approved the amendment allowing abortions to be performed through all 9 months of pregnancy for any reason. So in other words, the ACLU doesn't want a mom who wants to butcher the child inside of her and tear it apart, doesn't want her thinking about what she's about to do for 24 hours because she might actually have an attack of, I don't know, conscience, or somehow or another maybe endure a feeling of humanity and sadness and grief at what she is about to do, and that might stop her from doing so. That is exactly what they're worried about. They're exactly worried about moms thinking that maybe I shouldn't kill my child. And that is not good for business at Planned Parenthood or any of the other abortion providers that have asked the ACLU to file this lawsuit on their behalf. How reprehensible.
Number eight.
Climate change activists poured oil on a Ford electric truck at the New York Auto Show. Wait, what? I thought they were all about EVs. I thought they were all about EVs. Oil is what runs those other kinds of trucks. What are you doing? Well, they warned that electric vehicles will not save us. And our love of cars is killing the earth. So we need to, quote, hit the emergency brakes. All of those were slogans that they used and carried. The audience overwhelmingly groaned and replied, get the hell out of here. The activists, part of the UK-based group called Extinction Rebellion, were dragged out of the show and arrested. One of the activists was spotted carrying a Toyota swag bag, ironically. So I don't think they're advocating for Toyota over Ford. I think they are just exactly as nutty as it sounds. They don't want just gasoline-powered cars to be banned from the roads. They want all cars to be banned from the roads. Yes, they want us to go back to wooden wagon wheels being pulled by animals. Then, by the way, they will decry deforestation because of how many more trees we have to cut down to go back to the wooden wagon wheels. These lunatics need to be expurgated from our society, and I mean immediately. Let's go to
number 9.
And this one is the best one for last. Pop star Lizzo, the extra girthy pop star who made a name for herself not even by being a good singer, but by carrying all of her girth without clothing on it in public spaces. She dresses provocatively, shows off her self in the most in-your-face ways, and then complains that she is being fat-shamed. After she performed at Joe Biden's fundraising event in New York City, the one where Biden and Obama and Clinton all got together and they raised $25 million from celebrities and other super wealthy people because they have no earthly idea how to connect to the middle class. After she participated in that, Lizzo put out a social media statement. I'm tired of putting up with being dragged by everyone in my life and on the internet. All I want to do is make music and make people happy and help the world a little better than how I found it. But now I'm starting to feel like the world doesn't want me in it. I'm constantly up against lies being told about me for clout and views, being the butt. She used the word butt for a change without displaying hers. Of the joke every single time because of how I look. My character being picked apart by people who don't me and disrespecting my name. I didn't sign up for this S. I quit. It should be noted here that Lizzo is under investigation and facing multiple lawsuits from her background dancers for her sexual and psychological abuse of said dancers. So there you have it. That's your Top 9 at 9.
This has been the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio. AM 1420. The answer.
All right, it's 9:27. We'll take a timeout here on this Monday morning. We got Jim Jordan coming up. No fooling. Looking forward to that conversation. We'll squeeze you into it. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. And in case you need another reminder,
I think you're a special person. And I like your ins and outsides.
Sing it, Mr. Rogers.
Everybody's fancy. Everybody's fine. Your body's fancy. And so...
The answer.
All right, it is indeed now 9:35. Good morning to you. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. It is the first morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024, and I'm told that Congressman Jim Jordan is set to resign by the end of the day today, and he joins us now on AM 1420, The Answer, to tell us why. Congressman Jordan, good morning.
How are you doing, Bob?
I'm doing well.
You got the April Fool's going, too, right? Good for you.
I just figured, why not?
What the heck? Yeah. What the heck? What the transgender day on Easter Sunday? What the heck? You might as well do April Fool's today, right?
That's the sad part about it is that's the cruelest April Fool's joke of all is the day before the actual April Fool's Day. They did indeed, and Joe Biden recognized and celebrated and promoted the transgender day of visibility over Easter Sunday. And Congressman, you know, he can say, well, this wasn't about being anti-Easter. I had two different stories that I've already talked about this morning. The other one was at the traditional White House Easter egg roll. They banned any religious symbolism from any of the Easter eggs on Easter Sunday.
I heard that second part, and I thought, that really happened? They really did, like, affirmatively said you can't put any, you know, Christian or religious symbols on it? I mean, that makes no sense. It's the day that matters. It's the day that the Savior came back to life. I mean, it's but for the resurrection, the Christian faith doesn't mean anything really. And so it's everything. And yet when you, I don't know, it's sad to hear, but,
the way I phrased it is, and apologies for the graphic description, but I mean, I think Joe Biden just extended two big middle fingers to the entire Christian community of this country when he literally declared yesterday and put out that glowing statement about all of the different types of people and how you are the epitome of strength and courage and all of these things on a day that it's the holiest day of the Christian calendar, the day that, that good defeats evil, yep. the day that we are all saved by Christ rising from the dead, and Christians believe yep. that, and he supposedly is one of them. He basically kicked that entire narrative to the curb in favor of this transgender activism on this holy day. What do you think that means? And how should the American people take that?
I think it's all political. It just, again, we've talked about this so many times, but today's left has just a complete hold of the Democrat Party all the way up to the White House. And whatever ideology the left is for is where the party's going to be for, and the president's going to do these kind of things. I mean, it's really that basic in my mind. The radical left controls the Democrat Party. Now, again, I would say this: not all Democrats are crazy leftists, but the left does control their party, and this is one of their key positions now is this, and so the president's going to do it. It makes no sense, but that's. I guess in some ways it does make sense because, again, the left is driving their party completely.
Yeah, well, what I sit here and wonder is this not the kind of thing that backfires against them? Everything they do is political, you're right. But I'm thinking about the Christian majority in this country. We are a Judeo-Christian country. Christianity is mm-hmm. the overwhelming majority of the population of people who are of faith. And I really hope, and what I thought yesterday, and I actually posted about this too, is that if you have ever been unsure, and I don't know how many undecided voters there are in this country, Congressman, but if you've been unsure at all about what you're going to do this November, and you are a person of faith, if you're a Christian, does this not put it over the top for you? Does this not tell you
I would think,
that you cannot vote for that evil?
Yeah, I would think so. but again, you can kind of sort of line it up. I go the last several weeks here. Joe Biden in his State of the Union address, first thing he mentions is a foreign country. Joe Biden in his State of the Union address says, we're going to put a temporary port and pier into Gaza and give supplies to the enemy of our ally. I mean, we want Israel to win, yet we're going to give supplies to the other side. That makes no sense. That's sort of, I think we talked about before, that's sort of war 101. Then Chuck Schumer says, you talked about our Judeo-Christian heritage, says to our best friend, ally, Israel, you need a new prime minister. I mean, you could just keep going down all the radical things. Ketanji Brown Jackson tells the Solicitor General from Louisiana, arguing the case on censorship in front of the Supreme Court, your position on the First Amendment, you have the First Amendment hamstringing the government. That's exactly what it's supposed to do. And then, of course, we have this crazy declaration on the holiest day in the Christian calendar, the holiest day of the Christian faith, the day that our Savior came back from the grave, and they do this declaration. So, it's just one of them, just on and on you can go about the crazy things of today's left, which, again, as I said, controls their party.
Yeah, we 100%. We're talking to Congressman Jim Jordan. Of course, he is the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, the Weaponization Subcommittee on Weaponization of Government. He also sits on the Oversight Committee. I want to go back to the budget that we discussed very briefly last Monday. It was signed, of course, I think, under duress by so many, voted on under duress. Didn't you guys pass something a couple of years ago, a 72-hour rule that said you have to have possession of a bill, particularly one of this size, for at least 3 days to be able to consider before holding a vote on it? From what I read last Monday, this thing dropped at around 2:15, 2:30 a.m. on Thursday night and then was voted on Friday morning. You didn't have your 72 hours. How is this even valid?
No, right. They waived that rule and moved ahead with the bill. I think we talked.
Who waived that rule, if I may, sir? Who waived?
Well, if there's not an objection and a vote, it can go forward. And I think many of us were like, if we had 72 hours to look at a bad bill, we would vote no, just like we did with 24 hours to look at a bad bill. So I don't know that there was the push. Now, in an ideal world, it'd be better to have 72 hours. But my attitude was, I'm voting no because I already know what's in this thing. And the thing that bothered me the most, and there's all the woke stuff, there's the DEI stuff, there's money for foreign countries' borders, but meanwhile we got an open border here in our country. But the thing that bothered me the most, by far, was the $200 million additional money, new money, for an FBI headquarters in Maryland. And it's like, This is the FBI that spied on President Trump. This is the FBI that raided his home. This is the FBI that investigated moms and dads at school board meetings. This is the FBI who said pro-life Catholics were extremists. And this is the FBI who retaliated against whistleblowers who came forward and told us about some of those things I was just talking about. And we're giving them more money? How can we do that? So to me, that was the most egregious thing in this legislation. But I mean, I knew I was going to be a no, and whether I looked at it for 24 hours or looked at the bill for 72 hours.
You know, I get that, and I respect that, and I don't disagree with that. But you know what I do disagree with is waiving it and no one objecting and calling for a vote. Because guess what?
Fair enough.
There might have been people who voted yes for it who, had they had 72 hours to read it and have their staff pour through it and say, oh my gosh, I didn't know that was there, because there are a lot of tricks in there that you don't know about and you can't know in looking at it for 3 or 4 hours. It's 1,000 pages long. So while you were a certain no and you would have been no 72 hours later, there might have been some yeses who are moderate yeses. And I guess so. I'll probably, but then they have a chance to really review this thing and, whoa, this isn't good for the constituents in my district. This isn't good for the country as a whole. I'm changing my vote to no. That's why the 72-hour rule was implemented, right?
Yeah. The other dynamic that I think is probably even more important than that is in 72 hours, the country gets a better handle on what's going on in the bill, and then the country weighs in with their representative, right, lets them know. That's probably the bigger thing that could make a difference on this. But nevertheless, this thing passed. Like I said, my biggest concern was the new money for the additional money for continuing this idea that the FBI needs a new headquarters, which just drives me nuts.
Yeah, well, it does me too. I don't mean to minimize that at all. We did talk about that a little bit last week. You told me that was your biggest problem with it last week too, and I don't disagree with it one bit of that. But like I said, there are, I will say though, in addition to it, and you pointed out one of them, I just found this out this morning, $380 million specifically, what was earmarked for border security for, what were the four countries, let's see, Egypt, Jordan, Lebanon, Oman, and Tunisia. Five countries get $380 million of our tax dollars. And meanwhile, we have had, what, close to 10 million, counting the gotaways, come across in our border in 3 years, Congressman. Make it make sense.
It doesn't make sense. But then, and also, what happened like a week ago when they stormed the fence and knocked the fence down? They stormed the border with the National Guard people right there in Texas. You're like, holy cow. And yet we're sending money, hard-earned tax money, to foreign countries for their border. And oh, by the way, we do have a $33 trillion debt. You know, it's like maybe we should be focused on the United States of America with this money. All the kind of things that just frustrate Americans. And I mean, I get it, but it's just tough when you got Democrats in charge of the Senate and Joe Biden in the White House, and we got a one seat majority. So, I mean, I know it's a difficult job that Speaker Johnson has. I get that. But some of this stuff was, as you point out, just it made no sense to me.
No, you know, same here. And I don't want to change speakers again, but I'm very, very, very disappointed by what Speaker Johnson is doing here. And I believe the fight needed to be fought. We didn't even enter the ring. We just submitted before the battle even began. Didn't even make the 72-hour rule happen, and I'm disgusted by that.
Here's the fight I think should happen. I don't know if we discussed this last week or not, but this should happen. We should put on the House floor a bill to just fund Israel. Give the money to our dearest and best friend Israel. Send it over there and say, okay, Chuck Schumer, the guy who said that, you know, was telling our ally who should be their prime minister, okay, Joe Biden, you said you would veto this. Let's put it on send it right over to the Senate and see what they do with a clean bill to fund Israel for $17.3 billion to help with them deal with the terrorists that attack them, and so they can win this war. Let's put that on the floor. No Ukraine on it, nothing else on it except Israel, in light of what Joe Biden said in the State of the Union, what Chuck Schumer said about Netanyahu. Put that bill over there. That's the smart move, in my judgment. That's what I hope we do, and I've been encouraging our conference to take that route.
Congressman Jim Jordan is our guest this morning. Congressman, you mentioned in passing there, as we talked about the border part of this whole thing, the migrant horde that blasted through the razor wire and trampled National Guardsmen and so forth. The latest on that story came yesterday on Easter Sunday. A magistrate judge in El Paso by the name of Humberto Acosta released them all on their own recognizance, didn't even require bail. Quote, it is the ruling of the court that all of the rioting participation cases will be released on their own recognizance. These individuals are being set free after they attacked border security guards and National Guardsmen breaking into the country. This judge said, go free. Men, go free. There were some 70 of them, I guess, that were arrested after the border breach. Congressman, again, how the hell can we be a country of laws when laws are no longer enforced?
No, I mean,
who's going to go get them, by the way, when their trials come up? They're being released. They didn't say their charges were being dropped, but they said they're being released. Who's going to go and be able to find them and round them up? They have already proven that they'll be violent to get where they want to go. If some deputies or anybody else tries to apprehend these people to bring them back for their eventual trials, which probably will never happen, but if anybody tries to grab them, there's going to be violent confrontations, and probably somebody's going to be shot, and then they're going to blame the law enforcement.
Or you know, we're creating a situation where these guys, if they're never, they do something wrong and they're never held, then they're out doing other things wrong, and you get like the situation of the tragedy with Laken Riley.
Sure.
The guy who killed Laken Riley had been arrested for other things, charged with other things, and he was just like, so when you adopt that mindset, innocent people get hurt. I get it. You can't stop everything. But when people do wrong, if you actually incarcerate them, if you hold them, if you detain them, they're not going to go hurt someone while they're detained. That's the whole point. And you can get them to a decision. That's the problem with the Biden administration is they've invited everyone to come. They quit building the wall. You don't have to wait in Mexico. And when you get here, you will be released. And everybody knows it. And you will even be released if you storm the gate and attack law enforcement, National Guard, who are there at the border. You're going to get released. They're just going to keep coming now. And again, anyone with common sense can see this.
No question about it. Congressman, I want to move on. Speaking of law and order, there was a hero police officer who was killed by a multiple-time offending felon in New York City by the name of Jonathan Diller. He and his wife and family members got together to celebrate his life and to mourn his passing. He was joined there by former President Donald Trump. Or they were joined by former President Trump. This happened to be going on at the same time 30 miles away in Manhattan. Joe Biden, Barack Obama, and Bill Clinton got together with the wealthiest celebrities in the country and some of the wealthiest donors and raised $25 million for his reelection campaign. He hasn't said his name. He hasn't called him. He hasn't said a thing about this dead cop. What does that tell you about this? The difference between these two people?
No, I think the contrast is you know, obvious. And my understanding is Mr. Diller's spouse had invited the president to come, President Trump to come, and it was great that President Trump did in fact attend that funeral. And of course, the Democrats are doing, you know, they're raising a ton of money. I think the bigger problem for me is I think you're right. I don't know that I've heard that President Biden has said anything about Mr. Diller and done anything in any type of phone call or outreach to the family. So that to me is the bigger thing. Maybe Ms. Diller didn't want him there. Maybe, you know, the family didn't want Joe Biden there, but at least you would think that he should say something or reach out. But God bless President Trump. I thought that was a great gesture. And President Trump, you know, I've just got a chance to visit with this guy and get to know him over the last several years. He's a good man and loves our law enforcement. It was great that he was there.
Yeah, and I really do. I think it says an awful lot. Again, you know, Joe Biden did not know Laken Riley's name, said Lincoln Riley when he was forced to acknowledge her in that State of the Union address, and now he doesn't even acknowledge Officer Diller or the struggling, you know, state of law enforcement in this country today. They're so terrified of being sent to prison or worse for doing their jobs because, you know, violent encounters are almost always blamed on the police, and then when they are killed, they're just unrecognized. recognized by people like Joe Biden in this case. It's such a shame.
One thing. When I'm out and about traveling, we get a chance to interact with law enforcement at the airports and different places, and it's amazing. These guys, the respect and admiration they have for President Trump is they almost all the time someone will walk up to me and say, like, you know, if you keep fighting President Trump, you can just sense it. And they so appreciate, things like what President Trump did last week when he went to the funeral of the slain officer.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up, Congressman. We only have a minute or two left here, but I do have to ask you one more question, if I may.
Sure.
You and your judiciary committee has started an inquiry into the DOJ's National Red Flag Resource Center, as I understand it. This is, of course, such an extraordinarily important issue as they try, those who believe in gun control and who oppose the Second Amendment, to make it easier with federal support to take people's weapons away from them without due process, just on somebody's allegation that this person might be dangerous to himself or others, take their guns away and then make them go to court to get them back. That's what Merrick Garland is doing here. What are you trying to find with there? What are you doing about it?
We want to know that this federal grant dollars working through John Hopkins University to implement this extreme risk protection orders, better known as red flag laws, because you hit the nail on the head. I hate these red flag laws because the presumption is that, someone who's been around you may not like you, whatever, goes to a judge or goes to law enforcement and says, hey, Joe Smith is a dangerous guy. You need to take his way. And sometimes it can be simply them attesting to that, some kind of affidavit that they do. They come take your firearms, and then you have to demonstrate the burden then shifts to you to get those firearms back, to get your Second Amendment liberties back. The burden goes to you, and you've done nothing wrong. Just someone says you might be a risk to possibly do something wrong in the future. These things are crazy. And now that the federal government's trying to make sure this gets done right in the states that have passed these laws, that's scarier to me, too. So, yeah, as soon as we solve it. And by the way, this was in that bill. My understanding is this. There was some implementing language that was maybe part of this bill last week that for something that had passed before. So this is the kind of thing that is just so wrong. I cannot stand these red flag laws because it shifts the burden on a fundamental liberty we have guaranteed to us as citizens in our Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to try to find out exactly what they're up to.
It does exactly that. And I didn't know that it was in the bill. I think you're right. I believe you. But at the time, like Thomas Massie on Saturday morning wrote, he was the one who kind of alerted everybody to this. Yep. Massie tweeted and said, what the hell is this evil? And I thought that was something that was done afterwards in order to kind of deflect away from the, in other words, to slip it in while everybody was focused on the budget. But then I heard what you just said, that there was actually language in the budget that made this happen.
Yeah, we're checking that out because we think there may have been something
Okay.
The bottom line is this is a bad idea, and I these things are scary because that flips the whole burden for you to then go have to do something to exercise your Second Amendment liberty.
This is why it was so important for you guys to get the majority. And I know nobody was happy with the 2022 result because we wanted the red wave, we wanted the tsunami, and we got a very, very slow trickle. But it was important to even have a one-person majority as we do now so that you can run things like the Judiciary Committee so you can ask these questions and you can start these inquiries and investigations. Because you know damn well, if the Democrats were in charge of the House, we would never be looking at any of this. No one would call for such investigations. So it's so important doing it.
And they might pass a national red flag type of legislation. If they had the majority, you know they would, because they might be able to find nine Republicans in the Senate to go along with something. And then you know Joe Biden would sign it. So, your point is exactly right.
Congressman Jordan, thank you for the time this morning.
I appreciate it.
We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Take care.
All right, that's Jim Jordan. It's 9:56. We're going to get a timeout here. And on the other side, we're going to go into, again, it's a little bit kind of interesting how some of this stuff flows. We're talking so much about law and order. Now we're going to talk about law and order in Cuyahoga County and how important it was that we headed off a potential disaster of a Soros acolyte by the name of Matthew Ahn, who wanted to be prosecutor in Cuyahoga County. He challenged Mike O'Malley in the primary, the Democrat primary, and thank goodness Mike O'Malley won. We're going to discuss what the ramifications of that victory are, and maybe similar races around the country with Darvio Moro. He's going to join us next right here on Always Right Radio, AM 1420.com.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer. It's your host, Bob France.
All right, onward we roll into hour number two. It's 8 minutes after 10 o'clock on this first morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord 2024. Yesterday was the trans day of visibility. Today is the trans day of reality.
Boys are boys from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Girls are girls right from the start. Everybody's fancy. Everybody's fine. Your body's fancy. And so is mine. Only girls can be the mummies. Only boys can grow up and be the daddies. Yes, sir, everybody's fancy. Everybody's fine. Your body's fancy. And so is mine. I think you're a special person. And I like your ins and outsides. Everybody's fancy, everybody's fine. Your body's fancy, and so is mine.
Mr. Rogers taught so many kids so many important things. God, I wish he was still alive today to tell the truth. So today we are going to call the Trans Day of Reality. Yesterday they can have their fantasy. Today we have the reality. All right, moving right along. Thanks again to Congressman Jordan. Great conversation, as always, with him. I'm disappointed, by the way, the fact that nobody did invoke the 72-hour rule. No one called for a vote. They all agreed to waive the 72-hour rule to read everything in a 1,000-plus page, $1.2 trillion bill. A nation that's, $34 trillion in debt adds $1.2 trillion to that, and they don't even think we need 72 hours to look it over. No, rubber stamp. Republicans and Democrats alike. Unbelievable. But if you missed that conversation, you can catch it at the end of the show, about an hour after the end of the show at whkradio.com. Now, I want to go back. We talked a lot, Congressman Jordan and I, about law and order. And I want to talk about it now on a local level. We had Mike O'Malley, the current Cuyahoga County prosecutor, in our studio with former Cleveland Police Patrolmen's Association president Steve Loomis about a week or two right before the primary. That was held on March 19th, and we did so for a reason, because he needed to win that election. The reason why isn't so much of a love for Mike O'Malley, although I will say I respect him. He's a moderate Democrat. He is strong on his job. He believes in prosecuting criminals. He believes in binding over juveniles who commit big boy crimes so they can face big boy trials and big boy time. I like Mike O'Malley, but it was more out of a fear of the challenge of Matthew Ahn, who is a George Soros acolyte, a prosecutor. Had he won that primary, he would win the general election, because the Republicans have no one. It's going to take a write-in campaign in November for that, so it's not going to happen. If Matthew Ahn had won, we would be looking at Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, some of the most radical crime-ridden cities and jurisdictions in the country. That's what Cuyahoga County would devolve into, because Matthew Ahn, like the rest of them, they believe in no prisons, they believe in no police, they believe in no jails, they believe in no accountability whatsoever. They believe in group hugs and progressive ideals. So Mike O'Malley winning that was huge. Well, an article analyzing and breaking down not just the Cuyahoga County result, but similar results around the country appeared in Newsweek last week. And it was written by Darvio Moro. Darvio Moro, I am familiar with, because he's good friends with one of our favorite people, which is Khalid DeMar. And Darvio Moro wrote this piece for Newsweek celebrating the defeat of a far-left progressive candidate like Matthew Ahn and others. And I said, well, we got to talk about that. So I want to bring Darvio on now. He is a radio host, a co-host of the Outlaws radio show. He is also an entrepreneur as the CEO of the FCB Radio Network. Darvio, good to have you here on AM 1420 The Answer. What's shaking?
Hey, thanks for having me, Bob. I really appreciate it.
So I introduced you as a host and as an entrepreneur. Tell us more, though. Tell us who Darvio is.
So I run a media company based here in Cleveland. Produce audio content, video content. As a matter of fact, that's how I met Khalid. We worked in the business together as well. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I'm a writer at Newsweek, and that's where you saw the article that we're about to talk about in a little bit.
Well, that's good. You do a lot, and I really appreciate it. I respect the diversity of talent that you possess and being able to do all of those things, so I have a lot of respect for that. And I also respect your moderate views. Let's talk about those for a minute. We'll talk first about the piece and then maybe about a little bit of a bigger picture here. So you you shown not only a spotlight on the Cuyahoga County outcome, which you are supportive and appreciative of, but also some other races around the country in which moderates are starting to push back and maybe even defeat some of the radical progressivism that has taken over politics these days. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously Cuyahoga County, I live in Cuyahoga County, that was the big shining example that was right in my face, because that was the results of the race between O'Malley and Ahn. I believe the technical term for it is called beatdown. Michael O'Malley beatdown Matthew Ahn. He won 55 out of 59 counties, out of 59 municipalities in this county. Mm-hmm. Michael O'Malley also won the city of Cleveland by double digits. So he won everywhere except for the wokest of the woke areas in this county. And so, seeing that, I started to look across the country and see what else was happening across the country. At the same time, in Cook County, the home of Chicago, mm-hmm. the moderate, tough-on-crime Democrat prosecutor candidate won in that race. Now, that race was much closer. Obviously, Cook County is even bluer than Cuyahoga is, but that candidate still won. And it took them 10 days after Election Day to actually declare a victor, but the prosecutor candidate, the tough on crime prosecutor candidate, won in Cook County. And then when you start looking at other cities across the country, in Philadelphia, for example, there's a tough on crime mayor that was elected beating a progressive badly in Philadelphia. And you're starting to see, of course, in San Francisco with the recall of Chesa Boudin. As a matter of fact, after my article came out in Los Angeles, there's a tough on crime independent getting ready to run against George Cascone, and the polls show them up double digits against George Cascone. So what you're seeing is
that's huge.
I think in a lot of these blue, what we would associate with as traditionally blue counties, blue cities, blue areas, is there's a rebellion against this lawlessness. And one of the reasons, I believe, as someone who comes from the community, I'm from the inner city, there has been a complete and total overreach from what people had been saying in the first place. People were saying, you know, we want police to be held accountable when they do wrong. Nobody said they didn't want police at all. And so what you're seeing now, I think, is a backlash from voters. Even if you look at Washington, D.C., the mayor of Washington, D.C. was a progressive, and she was a progressive on crime, but the crime has gotten so bad in D.C. that the voters demanded them to do something, and they just passed a tough-on-crime bill where almost everyone in council voted for it. The mayor, a progressive, enthusiastically signed it, because the voters are just tired.
You hit on some of the most blue and radically progressive cities, Darvio, in the country when you ran down some of those. Chicago, Philadelphia, you mentioned in your article Chesa Boudin, who was recalled in San Francisco, and then Gascon facing maybe the most stiff challenge he's ever had from an independent who's moderate. That is a great sign. One pushback, though, I would say, is when you say nobody said we didn't want any police at all. Well, Chesa Boudin did. Matthew Ahn did. Many of those people did. But to your point, the constituents in those places pushed back and said,
Right.
No, that we don't want that. You may want that,
Correct.
But we don't want that because we are the ones who paid the price, right?
That's right. That's absolutely right. And that's what I mean when I'm talking about that. I'm talking about the actual people, the constituents. Now,
yeah.
You saw the activists, right? The activist class went to defund the police and even Matthew Ahn, who supported abolishing, exactly. Matthew Ahn supported abolishing the police because defund, I guess, was too moderate of a position for him. So you saw the activist class go way far and above anything that people wanted. When I go into the community, you hear people complaining about not having enough police in the community. So that was never what the people wanted. It was what the activist class wanted. And they took it and they used that moment of reexamining everything that was going on with police and stuff like that. And they used that to push radicalism. It was never about the people. I'll never forget, I interviewed former Mayor Frank Jackson during the whole Issue 24 push, and Mayor Jackson was vehemently against Issue 24. And he told me, he said, you know, there are some people who use these issues to promote their politics, not to assist the community. They just use the community for their own benefit. And he called them tragedy pimps. They take our tragedy and they pimp it to their own benefit. And that's what you see. That's what you saw the activist class, many in the activist class doing across this country, is they were using legitimate issues, legitimate concerns, legitimate grievances that people in the community had, and taking that to push this crazy Marxist, in many ways, agenda that the voters are now rebelling against.
We are talking with Darvio Morrow. He is a radio host. He is a CEO of a radio company, an entrepreneur, and a writer for Newsweek as well. So, Darvio, as a black man coming from the inner city, you know, this is something, as I mentioned before the conversation started, I had O'Malley and Steve Loomis in the studio with me, and we were talking about the importance of all these issues. And Steve Loomis has told me for years, all of the African-American people living in some of the most dangerous areas of Cleveland have told him the same thing for years, and that is, we want more cops, not fewer cops, because when you get rid of the cops, or you make the cops afraid by way of the Ferguson effect, when you make them afraid to come in and proactively police, it's our houses that are getting broken into, it's our cars that are getting jacked, it's our people that are getting beat up, because most crime, as you know, is typically committed in the communities in which the criminals live. So they target people who are near them, and it just so happens in black communities, it's a lot of black victims because it's a lot of black criminals. So they, you know, the idea that the far left represented that black America doesn't want cops, that black America wants to abolish, you know, we hear people like Cori Bush and other members of the squad saying we want to abolish the police. In addition to these DAs that we're talking about here, the idea that black America didn't support police is just, it's just wrong on its face. Most black Americans know that their best friends are the police officers because their best enemy or their worst enemies are the people that live near them.
You know, it's always been absurd to hear some of the arguments that's made. And I think a lot of that is a result, in my view, of media bias. I think part of it, if you look at Pew Research, they examine, and they're really, really good at this, particularly with the black community. They examine black Democrats. I'm talking black, not talking black independents or black Republicans. Black Democrats. Only 29% of black Democrats self-identify as liberal. Everybody else identifies as either moderate, or 25% of black Democrats identify as conservative. But what you see is the activist class and the activist class and the media infrastructure an overrepresentation of the 29% of black Democrats that identify as liberal. So they're so loud and they dominate the conversation that it crowds out everybody else who are saying, hey, well, wait, we didn't say that. Like, no, we didn't. we didn't want that. You know, I'm someone, and you know this, Bob, if I disagree with something the police did, I'll criticize them on it. But I've never been anti-police. I've never been, oh, I don't think we need police. My father and grandfather worked in law enforcement. So I understand the importance of it. And I'm from the inner city. I'm from South Collinwood. So I understand. I grew up I was born in the 80s, grew up in the 90s. I remember the crack epidemic. So I understand the importance of safety.
Amen.
And it's absurd that people make these arguments as if they represent the community, when really what they're doing is damage to the very people that they claim to want to help.
That's very well said. And I'm so glad to hear your first-person perspective from that. Your experiences growing up and your observation and awareness of it now is so incredibly important and so needed. Real quick, because you mentioned you interviewed Frank Jackson, the current mayor, Justin Bibb, endorsed Michael Malley and opposed Matthew Ahn. I don't know him well enough. I've never talked to the man, but I kind of had Justin Bibb pegged as being a pretty progressive guy, maybe even more so than Frank Jackson was. But then he went ahead and endorsed O'Malley. Did I read him wrong? What's your take on him?
You know, I can't read him. I can't figure him out, like, because there are things that he will do that is far left. And then there are things that he'll do that'll be more moderate. Now, you know, I had a pretty good relationship with Mayor Jackson. And, you know, we spent a lot of time together. We did a lot of interviews together. He's a pretty pragmatic person. And I viewed, you know, Mayor Bibb as pretty dogmatic. I can't get a read on this guy. I don't know. I really don't know what he believes, to be honest with you. And, you know, I don't think that's necessarily a good thing, but I don't know.
And I appreciate your honesty there. I don't either. And like I said, I don't know him that well. All I know is, based on the first part of what you said, I have seen plenty of that, of the real crazy progressive type far left stuff. But then I saw this happen. I'm like, huh, this is a very odd pairing. I don't say pairing, but a support for Michael Malley, because I would have thought that Justin Bibb would have been all about what Matthew Ahn was selling and bringing to the table there. So I appreciate your honesty about that. I know your article again was about moderate Democrats winning and defeating the real far progressive left across the country. But let's just stay home for just a second here and talk about the existence of this civilian review board. Between the consent decree that was put in place during the Obama years, in large part due to a couple of high-profile incidents we don't need to get into, but this consent decree and the creation of this civilian review board, where I am told, Darvio, that these individuals on the civilian review board who get to decide whether or not police acted properly in a host of cases, these people are being paid not $75 an hour, $750 per hour to sit there as non-professional law enforcement officers who have never been trained in law enforcement and judging the actions of the law enforcement officers and what they believe to be reasonable and what not to be. It is an extraordinary body that I think is making it impossible for cops to even. That's one of the reasons why they're 300 officers below budget. The budgeted number in this in the city of Cleveland, they can't drag people to put on a badge in this city anymore. And I think that's one of the reasons why. But that's my suburban white guy view of it. What is inner city black guy view of it?
So, and for people who don't know that. What Bob is talking about is a result of Issue 24, which is one of the reasons why I was opposed to Issue 24 from the start, because it seemed like it was going to be a boondoggle of epic proportion, particularly when you have written in the law, to your point, one of the things you just said, written in the law that you cannot have someone at the table who has any experience with law enforcement. That's absurd. Absurd to me. That's absolutely absurd to me. And we've seen the chaos that's happened with that board, almost fights breaking out, all sorts of things. Like, it is completely and totally dysfunctional. And the unfortunate thing, and by the way, to your question before about Mayor Bibb supported Issue 24, and he still supports the results of it to this day.
That's why I thought he'd be so pro-on, to be honest with you.
And, well, it makes me wonder, like, does he really believe that this thing is going to do what the proponent said it's going to do? It's not going to work. It's just not going to work structurally. If you look at the way it was written structurally, it won't work. I'm not opposed to the idea of a citizen review board, but I don't think it should be mandatory. I think it should be advisory like it used to be. I don't think that it's a good idea for people who don't know anything about how the law enforcement world works to be able to enforce decisions on the police department. And a lot of police officers just don't want to deal with it. And I, you know, when I was out saying publicly that I was opposed to issue 24, I had police sources telling me, if this thing passes, a lot of cops are going to leave. And that's exactly what happened, because it's a nightmare. It's a disaster. And you have some people saying, oh, well, that's just because the police didn't want to be accountable. That's BS, because the police, the Cleveland Police Department, had already been living under the consent decree. You didn't see a widespread amount of police officers leaving during the consent decree. They were living with that. They were living under that. And I can tell you personally, as someone who's had, I've been profiled by the police before. I had negative experiences with the Cleveland Police Department prior to the consent decree. The police department was different. They did make changes. They did make improvements. One of the reasons why Mayor Jackson was opposed to issue 24, other than the fact that he knew it would be a disaster, is because he said we didn't need it. Because all of the things that people said they wanted the police department to be doing, they were already doing. And I know that for a fact. So this, it's not going to work. Set up not to work. It's a disaster from the start.
Darvio, I really, you know, great stuff. He started the music twice, actually, on us here, so we got to stop now. I missed it once, I missed it twice, so we got to stop. But I didn't want to interrupt your role, because it was great, and I really, really appreciate the conversation. I hope this is something we can do more often. I love your viewpoint. I love your mentality. I think you're fair and you're honest about everything that you talk about, so I hope we can talk again.
I appreciate that, man. I love to.
Thank you, Darvio. God bless you, man. 10:29, we'll take a time out here. We'll come back and I'll
answer.
Okay, it is 10:35. Good Monday morning to you. Again, thanks for being with us. Thanks to Darvio Morrow. Great conversation there. Thanks to Congressman Jim Jordan, who joined us in hour number one. Congressman Jordan and I talked about a number of things, not the least of which is Joe Biden's big, long middle finger that he extended to the entire Christian community of this country, and maybe Christians around the world, by allowing it to the transgender day of visibility to replace Easter as the focus of his administration. How do we know this? Well, because he essentially said so with a statement that he released, a great big love letter celebrating the joy, strength, and courage of the bravest people I know, people with psychological conditions that need treatment, but this is what he called them, transgender and non-binary Americans. We see them, they belong, and they should be treated with dignity and respect. But apparently Christians should not be. On the same day that the Transgender Day of Visibility, I apologize for the redundancy when I say this, but what the freaking world is that? Are there any other individuals in America that are more visible than cross-dressers who are celebrated and who are lauded and who are given an entire month to dance in perverse, disgusting, reprehensible outfits in front of children, to read books to them at libraries in a blatant attempt to groom them into a deviant lifestyle? Is there anybody more visible than these individuals? Sorry to get off on a tangent here, but wow. On the same day that he pulled that nonsense, while actual Christians were celebrating the risen Lord and the saving of all mankind from its sins, he also held the traditional Easter egg roll at the White House, which is fine. That's very, very traditional. But this year's Easter egg roll was very, very clear. Don't you dare bring that Jesus character into Easter. The Easter egg art contest stated without any ambiguity that the art submissions, quote, must not include any questionable content, religious symbols, or overtly religious themes, end quote. And Joe Biden says he's a Catholic, the same guy, by the way, and I won't go into it, who champions abortion on demand all the way through 9 months of pregnancy the way the rest of the radical left does, in complete separation from church teachings. The guy now says Easter should be secular. Do the bunnies, do the chickens, the peeps, maybe he likes peeps like he does ice cream, I don't know. Do the eggs. Don't you bring any of that religious into this place, that religion into this place. And oh, by the way, the celebration of the day, it conflicts with transgender day of reality, or I'm sorry, day of visibility. I side with the transgender day of visibility is essentially what he said. I'm just so disgusted, so revolted, so repulsed by what this man has done. I need to cleanse my eyes and maybe cleanse my my mindset here. That's why we're going to talk to somebody who may be able to do that for us. I want to welcome to the show Pastor Jim Staley. He's the director of Passion for Truth Ministries. He has released a statement about this in support of Christianity and support of Resurrection Day and against what President Biden has done to hijack that day away from Christians. Pastor Staley, it's good to have you on our program here. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. I would be doing a lot better if we had a president that wasn't completely dividing this country at every given chance that he has. But thanks for having me.
Yeah, that is exactly what it is. It is about division. And this is, you know, this isn't new. This is just maybe one of the more egregious examples of that division being fostered and fomented by the president. Why do you think he wouldn't have maybe made a statement in recognizing Easter, recognizing the, you know, the saving of humanity that he apparently believes in since he says he is a Catholic and a Christian? Why wouldn't he have said, you know, it might be best that we recognize our trans friends and others on a separate day because, you know, this is the extraordinarily holy Easter holiday?
Yeah, it is definitely befuddling and very confusing that we have a president that has really locked himself into representing the minority. And I'm all for minorities, but when minorities go against the eternal principles that this country was founded upon, the principles that allow us to actually be free, he doesn't see that he's actually enslaving Americans to an ideology that is not only anti-biblical, it's dangerous. Because when you start making what is really unholy and dangerous to society, people that have mental problems that need help, and start bringing them up as the most celebrated, courageous people. I mean, forget about our soldiers that were in Afghanistan, right? Forget about our military and making similar speeches to them. Wouldn't that be nice? But now we're creating an ideology that says that we must agree with what everyone believes, no matter what it is. And where does it stop? And as a believer and as a minister of an international organization, I get a chance to meet a lot of people around the world in different cultures, and they're scared to death what's coming out of America because at some point we're not going to be able to say this is wrong. So what happens when a transgender or somebody wants to identify as a 7-year-old and molest a 3-year-old? How is the courts going to deal with that? Because you can't say that where is a crime if you can identify out of it? That's the ludicrous that this is going. It's a very slippery slope. And what Biden did to 65% of Americans that believe in celebrating the death of Jesus Christ on this day, and a resurrection, I should say, was just an assault. It would literally be the same as him coming out on Passover and declaring National Bacon Day. It would be an insult to every Jewish person and Christian that celebrates Passover as well across the globe. So at the very least, I don't know who's writing this stuff for him. There's no wisdom, and it certainly does not point America together, but it certainly points us apart.
We are talking with Pastor Jim Staley, director of Passion for Truth Ministries. I think that's great phrasing, by the way. We have a problem when people can just identify their way or self-identify their way out of what used to be considered to be crimes and immoral actions. Because you're right, that adult who can identify as a 7-year-old and commit an atrocity against a 3-year-old, well, that's not a pedophile. That's a minor attracted person who, by the way, is only 7 himself, so he can't be held accountable for his actions. He identifies as a minor, and minors, of course, are not allowable, not prosecutable by law for these types of things. I want to read a couple of things to you, Pastor, and then the White House responds to them and get your analysis of this. Speaker of the House Mike Johnson posted yesterday, The Biden White House has betrayed the central tenet of Easter, which is the resurrection of Jesus Christ, banning sacred truth and tradition while at the same time proclaiming Easter Sunday as Transgender Day is outrageous and abhorrent. The American people are taking note. I hope that the American people are taking note, by the way. Governor Tate Reeves of Mississippi said President Biden has declared that Easter Sunday is now Transgender Day. This is an intentional attempt to insult and mock Christians across America. Shocking, but not surprising. And former President Donald Trump called for an immediate apology to millions of Christians and Catholics for this egregious assault on this holy day. And I bring all of that to your attention to then ask you about the White House response to that criticism. Quote, and this is from White House spokesman Andrew Bates, doubling down on the Biden administration's policy here. Quote, as a Christian who celebrates Easter with family, President Biden stands for bringing people together and upholding the dignity and freedoms of every American. Sadly, it's unsurprising politicians are seeking to divide and weaken our country with cruel, hateful, and dishonest rhetoric. President Biden will never abuse his faith for political purposes or for profit. How do you respond to that, Pastor?
Well, with a long pause that we don't have enough time for, scratching my head, because none of that is true. First of all, from a biblical perspective, the word Christian is a Latin with a Greek suffix, and it literally means, it's Christianos, it means like Christ, like Christ-like. There's nothing about President Biden that has any fruit of support of the biblical image of God. Can you imagine Jesus going up to the woman at the well that had five different husbands in his eyes and was committing adultery and fornication, saying, hey, look, we love you. We embrace you. I just want you to know that I support you, and I'm going to make a day for you right now. You need to be visible for where you're at. No. He gently, lovingly said, look, you've got an issue. You're not getting my best. You need to go and sin no more. He told the truth, and the truth is what sets people free. Right now, we've got Andrew Bates here, Mr. Bates, saying that the president's a Christian. That he's upholding the dignity and freedoms of every American. That's absolutely not true. He just stepped on 65% of us. And he goes on to say, unsurprisingly, politicians are seeking to divide and weaken our country. No, the truth is the liberal media is going to spin this and say March 31st has always been the visibility day for the LGBTQ community, and it just so happened to land on Easter. Okay, that's a fact. But the reality is it's also a fact that Biden's the first president to ever honor it. And so because he chose to do this, and he chose to do this, this is not something he had to do. There's a million days every single day that people are honored and things are honored and whatever. But this would be like coming out during Martin Luther King Day or Black History Month and talking about honoring the KKK. Like, this is just, it's so abhorrent what he's doing. He chose to do it because this is his faith. This is his religion. Religion is his political view of trying to get to bring up the bottomless pit of hell, in my opinion, and make it vote. And that is just not something that we as believers in Christ support. We can love the person, but absolutely abhor the sin. I don't want to see children molested, but I don't hate the person that does it. But the sin is egregious, and it needs to be prosecuted. And we're in a dangerous place in this country when you start taking what used to be crimes and sin and legitimizing it, oh, because of the person in their background, or they had a bad upbringing. There's no excuse for sin. We choose to do that, and Biden is making these choices right now that is dividing our country with his own religion, and it's certainly not Christian.
Yeah, it's just so frustrating, Pastor, to hear. I mean, what you said at the very beginning is true. He literally is dividing people in this country. It's the only explanation for some of these decisions. It is to divide. And yet when people speak out against it, he then calls them divisive. Blames. I mean, it's straight up projection and deflection of what they themselves do, you know, that they want to blame on their political opponents. And again, I'm not a pastor. I don't walk in your shoes. I'm not particularly the best Christian. I try, and I know I'm not perfect. But I know what Easter is, and I know what baby killing babies is all about. This man professes to be a Catholic and a Christian. He completely abandons the Resurrection Day, the day we celebrate the resurrection of the Lord, which is the whole basic principle behind Christianity, and he abandons, support for the preborn, and literally, you know, supports his vice president, for crying out loud, just toured Planned Parenthood facilities to tell them what a great job they're doing at butchering babies. How can this man, and again, I say this from a standpoint of not being worthy of being critical of somebody else's faith, except when I see something that is as egregious as his.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I definitely share your sentiment. I think there's millions of Americans that are angry about this. And I take a little bit different perspective from the idea that President Biden does not represent me. He does not represent my faith or the way that I believe. It's just such an unwise decision as the President of the United States that's supposed to represent all of the diversity within the United States. But diversity used to be defined as ethnic origins. It did not used to be defined as sexual deviancy. And right now, the more deviant you are, the more diverse you are in your craziness, the more that the term minority, which used to have a completely different definition, is now elevated to a place where real minorities are being threatened. So now you've got funding in the United States government that is moving towards what they now call a minority, which used to be called a mental disorder, is receiving funding and backing. And now, Biden has put on a cheerleading outfit, as scary as the imagery as that might be. And from a biblical worldview, this is turning the pages of prophecy. You know, I just released a video on our YouTube channel about the solar eclipse coming up and its prophetic implications. It's become the most watched video on the internet with 3 million views in 14 days because people are interested in what's going on in prophecy. And I'm here to tell you right now on this show, what Biden is doing is literally falling in right inside the pages of prophecy, setting up for what God says at the end of time, where all nations are going to turn against Israel and is going to turn against his scriptures. It says that man will do whatever's right in his own eyes. And that's exactly where we're at right now. Man is doing whatever's right in their own eyes because we've left the Judeo-Christian principles that this country's founded on.
We are talking with Pastor Jim Staley, the director of Passion for Truth Ministries. How much of a role do you think, looking forward, and I guess I am asking you, since we're talking about President Biden and we're talking about what President Trump said in response to this yesterday, too, I guess I am asking you to be political. You can choose to answer it however you wish, but how much of a role do you think people's faith, particularly Christians, and Jews, too? I think the Judeo-Christian, mantra, if you will, or the credo of this country is so extraordinarily important. How much do you think the faith of the voters will drive their decision in November?
I think every single believer that has the Bible as their foundational guidestone, as the instruction manual, if you're going to call yourself a follower of Christ, we are required to live by that standard. It's not just an intellectual assent, it's a lifestyle. So you cannot separate your faith from what you do. And the founding fathers never wanted to do that. The whole separation of church and state was to keep the state out of the church, not the church out of the state. The whole thing was founded upon, for crying out loud, if pastors would not have been political, there would have been no war of independence. It was the pastors that actually encouraged their parishioners to get their pitchforks and guns and fight England. This is how it's supposed to be. So answer your question directly, 100%. I think people are going to come out, they're going to vote their faith, they're going to vote their conscience. And I just want to say one thing, because I'm not a nonprofit, so I'm okay with saying whatever I want. And that's a reason why we chose not to. We got rid of our nonprofit status because I want to go back to the authentic ability for pastors to speak their mind.
Good for you.
We are not voting for a pastor. And there's a lot of people that don't like President Trump because of his attitude or his arrogance. Okay, great. Find me a leader that's changed the world outside of Jesus Christ that didn't have a bit of arrogance. But we're not voting for a pastor. We're voting for policies. And when Christians realize that, the choice is extraordinarily clear. Right now, we're going down a path that is going to destroy America. We're letting millions of people in at the border that they're raping, pillaging, and killing people. And unfortunately, our president doesn't even seem to care about that. But he's opening up the border for sin, debauchery, and mental illness to take a place. And eventually, maybe they'll be on a ticket. for a political role. But right now, people need to vote their conscience and their faith like never before.
Well, Pastor, first of all, good for you for, you know, being nonprofit and being able to speak on these things because they matter. I think they should matter to all people of faith. And I may be more cynical than you. I fear that they're not going to vote their faith. And my reason for that is at least not all of them. Is that particularly the Judeo side of Judeo-Christian beliefs in this country. Because right now, you know, the Holy Land of Israel was attacked and is always under constant attack from Arab Muslims in the region. And we all know what happened. And you know, Jewish Americans who are being surveyed about what they support in this country, they continue to support the Democrat Party. They continue to support a Democrat Party that is abandoning the Israelis who are fighting for their lives over there. These Democrat leaders are calling for ceasefire, 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 which is going to allow the Hamas militants to, you know, regather and reorganize and then commit their next attack on Israel, which they have already pledged to do. And yet Jewish American voters continue to back that party. So I'm a little cynical, and you know, maybe that's not the right way to be, but I'm a little bit concerned, pessimistic, if you will, that that they're gonna vote for what's right for their faith.
Well, I totally understand that, and I happen to be, because my whole bent and background, my expertise is in first century Judaism and the Hebraic culture of Christianity, and so I have a lot of friends and rabbis in Israel, and some very connected in the Jewish realm as well. I actually celebrate Passover. That's kind of my thing. I celebrate the resurrection, you know, on the day that it actually happened. But I will tell you that those Jewish people that they're being polled are typically secular Jews, many of them. But the Jewish people that I know of that do and had voted Democrat in the past, they are, and that's for other reasons for another discussion, but they are beginning to move. The pendulum is moving. They're seeing the president come out and say, look, you need to hurry up and stop what you're doing, and starting to call Israel out as if they're doing war crimes. That was the words that came out of the White House last week, was that Israel's beginning, they want to minimize, quote, I think it was minimize the crimes. And this is a very scary place to be. So in some ways, and then I'll be cynical on the other side, in some ways, Biden is doing the best job he can possibly do to convert every Jew in America to vote Republican or more conservative, because he's crossing lines on the most liberal Jews in America that they had hard lines, and he's crossing them. So it is a sad place when any Christian or any Jewish person that believes in the fundamentals of the faith, of the biblical principles that we're given, to vote in a direction that's complete opposite of that. To that, to me, as a pastor, I have to say, look, I'm just a fruit inspector. If you're not voting biblical standards, but you're voting things that are anti-Bible, I have to question your faith. And I'm not so sure, just like the Apostle Paul said, he said, look, not every Jew is a Jew just because he's born a Jew. A Jew is one who's inwardly a Jew and following the faith of their forefathers. So I think Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob would be rolling over their graves to think that one of their children and descendants would be voting for like a pharaoh or voting for someone that is anti the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So, but hopefully we're in a place where people, that the writing on the wall is more clear, the line in the sand is getting more clear, and people are just flat out going to have to choose right versus wrong.
Well, that's exactly what it's all about, right versus wrong. And Pastor Staley, I really appreciate you. We're talking to Pastor Jim Staley, Director of Passion for Truth Ministries. Is there a place where anybody can learn more about Passion for Truth?
Absolutely. You can go to our website at passionfortruth.com. But you can also reach us over at our YouTube channel. Most popular is Passion for Truth Ministries. The channel's Passion for Truth video. And I encourage people to check out this solar eclipse video that's all about prophecy. It's totally fascinating, the connections I found with past total solar eclipses and what happened. So that's where they can check us out, passionfortruth.com.
Terrific stuff. Thank you, Pastor Staley. We appreciate your time.
All right.
10:58 now. It's Always Right Radio on AM1420.com.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know
and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
Ooh, doggy. What a start to the new work week, huh? 2 hours that just flew right on by with tremendous conversations with some really, really important people. Well, I don't know about important in every case. Certainly the topics were very, very important, and I certainly appreciate those who came by. Jim Jordan is definitely an important person, topic and personality, because of who he is and what he does, sitting on the Judiciary Committee. If you missed Jim Jordan, catch that one. If you missed Dario Moro, who joined us from the Outlaw Radio Show and his company, he wrote a great piece for Newsweek on crime in Cleveland and how progressives, the radical progressives, are being defeated by the moderate Democrats in blue cities over all over the country. That's a huge step forward for all of us, I think. We had a great conversation there. That you can listen to at WHKRadio.com after the show, about an hour after the show. And then we just wrapped up with Pastor Staley about President Biden's middle finger to all Christians and Christian Americans, whether or not the people of this country will vote their faith, which is what I want to talk to you about right now. But it is the first morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024. I appreciate you being here. By the way, this is also something else. Yesterday, Joe Biden declared to be the Transgender Day of Visibility. Today is the Transgender Day of Reality. And as such,
you can go to the doctor and get cut up. You can go down to the dress shop and get made up. You can go down there and get drugged up. But at the end of the day, you were just a drugged up, dressed up, made up, cut up, man or woman. You ain't changed what God put in you, that DNA.
Transgender Day of Reality today. Reality. That's reality. They don't like reality. They don't want to be smacked in the face with reality. But that's exactly what, if we are compassionate human beings, we must do. Let me say that part again. If you are compassionate, you will demand that these individuals face reality rather than play along with their fantasies. Because who are you helping by enabling people to live fantasy lives and pull children into fantasy lives that end up with both psychological and physical health issues, deformities, problems? In all seriousness, are you helping anybody when you enable or facilitate fantasy? No, you're not helping anybody. You know, I've been reading over the course of the last 2 days online, even when I was in Tennessee with my family for our Easter weekend. I've been kind of online a little bit here and there and following what some of the left are saying about Biden's decision yesterday to declare yesterday the Transgender Day of Visibility, instead of recognizing it for what it is, which is the holiest day on the Easter calendar, which is the day of our resurrected Lord, the day that all of our sins were forgiven, the day that those who repent are forgiven by his suffering and then his rising, his defeating of death. That's what yesterday is about. It is, as I say, the most holy day, you know, of the year. It's the basis for which all Christianity exists. Christ rose. We believe it, therefore we are Christians. And if we don't get to celebrate that day, if that day is hijacked from us and taken away from us while they try to play divisive, as Pastor Staley just said, play divisive games with us, to try to guilt us, to try to shame us into thinking that we're bad people if we don't, quote unquote, recognize, what does Biden call them, some of the bravest people I know, he said. The absolute courage of the bravest people I know. The transgender and the non-binary people. It's not courageous to be suffering from a mental disorder. It's not courageous at all. It's tragic. It's sad. And what I've been following over the last couple of days, as I said, on social media and in traditional media on some online stories and articles, is that we are the ones who are filled with hate because we don't want children to be drawn into the social contagion of transgenderism or other, you know, of the 97 different genders that are appearing on the quote-unquote plus part of these, the gender spectrum. You know, they're out little, they can't just give you the letters anymore. The alphabet and the symbols are too long, so they just put a plus at the end of it. And that means, and all of the other ones we haven't made up yet. You know, the puppies and the kitty people and the people who identify as reptiles and the people who identify as something in the morning, something else in the afternoon, and the people who identify as, I mean, they're literally making them up as time goes on. There's more and more and more that are added, all of these genders, which is how you know this is complete and total hogwash. As Mark Robinson, Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, has said time and time again.
Ain't but two genders. Two genders. Ain't nothing but men and women.
Not 97. Not an unlimited, indefinite number. Just two. That's it. But what they're saying is that we hate transgender people. And that we hate transgender children. This is what they're telling us. This is the shaming that they're trying to do. Even as they express their hate for Christians, quite literally, by defaming the holiest day of the year, they're attacking us and saying we are defaming, or I'm sorry, we are hating rather, trans people. And what I want it to be, what I want to make very, very clear, and I want everybody to kind of adopt this, is say, look, if you actually care about trans people, like we do, we don't hate them. Show compassion for them. Try to heal them. Try to help them. There aren't very many of them. Less than 0.5%. As recently as 20 years ago. Before this new social contagion, the internet, social media exploded on the scene. Online influencers making their way into classrooms and libraries. Before the social media contagion began, as recently as 20 years ago, 0.5% of the population suffered from the psychological condition known as gender dysphoria. Matter of fact, it wasn't even known as gender dysphoria then. They called it gender identity disorder. Now it's gender dysphoria, okay, but it was such a tiny, tiny percentage of the population, kind of like the tiny percentage of the population that have a lot of other psychological disorders. You know what I'm talking about. Manic depressives. Bipolar. Where are their days of visibility? What day is manic depressive day of visibility? What day is bipolar disorder day of visibility? What day is national schizophrenia day of visibility? Which day is anorexia, bulimia day of visibility? You see, all of these things are psychological disorders. You know this. I know this. Right? So why are we all focused only on one psychological disorder? Why do the gender dysphoric people get an entire day of visibility? So important is it that it hijacks and distracts from and takes away from the celebration of the holiest day in the Christian calendar in an overwhelmingly Christian society. Why? Like I said, gender dysphoric, less than 0.5%. Now suddenly, somebody decides to take it mainstream and try to convince people that they're gender dysphoric. And you get all of these young people, all of these kids confused. They're already a little bit socially isolated from one another. You do realize that all of these things are kind of interwoven with one another, right? What happened when the social media revolution began? What happened when the smartphone hit popular culture to the point where they're like being, you know, distributed like candy for free to every kid? It's not free. Parents pay for it, but it has the practical impact of like giving out free candy, right? Around the internet kind of got into full bloom at the turn of the century, right? The dot-com boom was 99, 2000, 2001. That's when the whole thing really started to you know, just grow by exponential numbers. It was around 2009 and 2010 that the smartphone boom began, where it wasn't just everybody got on their computer, their laptop, their desktop, or whatever. Now they can do it in their hands. They got phones, smartphones. The flip phone was gone, where you could just text one another, which was already enough of a huge part of the social disorders, antisocial disorders affecting a lot of young people when they could just text each other instead of talking to one another. Of course, that was preceded by the beeper. The beeper, then the phone with the texting on it, the flip phone, and then the full-on smartphone where you can access the internet in your hand. And then the evolution of social media where you can read all about the lives of other people, and you can read the opinions of other people, and you can watch them live their lives, and you don't even have to leave your house to have interaction with people now, except that it's fake interaction. It's not reality interactions. It's faux interactions. And it led to a social isolation of people. I think particularly this youngest generation of the Gen Zers, when this all started, and they all got phones in their hands around 2009, 2010, 2011, somewhere in that neighborhood, and they started living their lives in their basements or on their couches or wherever, and living it virtually instead of with reality. And what does that create? That creates a social anxiety that when they get in front of real people, they're uncomfortable. And when they are uncomfortable, and you add that to the stresses that are associated with things like puberty, as people, I just interviewed Chloe Cole, a detransitioner for my TV show for Strictly Speaking last week. It'll air, I think, by the end of this week or the early part of next week. But I interviewed Chloe Cole. We talked about, you know, she hit puberty earlier than some of her friends, and her body started to change. She started to grow breasts and things, and it made her all uncomfortable. And this is not abnormal. This is, in fact, a very normal part of development, is achieving and reaching puberty. It creates all kinds of stress, hormonal interactions with brain functions and so forth. You take social isolation because of the smartphone craze and the social media craze, and the online virtual reality substituting for actual reality, added to young kids who are already a little bit socially anxious because of their bodies changing, they're hitting puberty, and they're starting to getting attracted, and all of these kinds of things. Add to the fact that they don't know how to interact with one another, and they are so easily suggestible that, you know, to become more popular, you have to find an identity. And not just a plain old ordinary, you're just a straight white or black or whatever boy or girl. No, no, no. You got to find an identity. You got a non-binary yourself, or you got a trans yourself, or you got a furry yourself or something. You want to get popular. You want to get friends. You want to make friends. You want to be seen. You want to be visible where it becomes so uncomfortable for you. You have to do this. This is what has been done. It is so pervasive and so devastatingly destructive in the United States that European countries are watching us. and they're saying, holy hell, look at the de-evolution of the society of the Americans. Look what they're doing over there. What used to be less than one half of 1% is now 20, 25% of school classes. 50% in some cases where the kids now say that they're not what they were born as. And these European countries, you know what they're doing? It's like the Scared Straight program back in the 80s. Remember they used to take kids into jails and prisons and let them see what life is like on the inside, maybe scare them away from committing crimes? Because you don't want to go there. That's a bad place. Do you know how many European countries are using the United States as the model for a Scared Straight program? And they have outlawed gender transitions for young people, not just surgeries, but even for blockers and cross-sex hormones. They're putting the whole thing on pause, if not outright canceled. Because they see what's happening in the United States. We're destroying our culture. We're destroying our kids. Other countries see it. We are promoting it. Other countries are terrified of it. We are promoting it. And they say that people like me, and maybe people like you, who speak out against it, we're hateful. We're bigots. We're transphobic. We hate trans kids. We want to see them commit suicide. When the reality is the exact opposite is true. The people who hate those kids are the ones promoting the false anti-science, anti-biology notion that they were born in the wrong bodies and that they should undergo severe, physically crippling procedures to make it right. That's going to cause them psychological and physical pain for the rest of their lives. Who are the people that care about trans people? People like me. People like you. Because we're compassionate. We understand their suffering. The tiny, tiny select few that actually have gender dysphoria in particular. And then the others who have been mentally manipulated through the social contagion into adopting a new personality, and that's all it is. We want these people to get the psychotherapy that they need to get right. We're compassionate. So the next time somebody calls you a transphobe, no, you say, no, I'm not a transphobe. I don't fear these people. I'm trans-compassionate. I want them to get right. And what is right? Right isn't cutting off healthy organs. What's right isn't sterilizing and chemically castrating young people, then cutting off their breasts, cutting off their genitalia, harvesting flesh from other parts of their body to create fake genitalia, carving into the meat of their forearms or their legs to try to create phony genitalia. This isn't compassion. This isn't life-saving. This isn't affirming. This is destructive. This is mutilating. This is experimenting. So yesterday they called it the Transgender Day of Visibility. I call today the Transgender Day of Reality. If you are trans-compassionate, then you join us in sharing this view. Join us in saying, no, do not refer your kid to a clinic whose only goal is to profit off of their pain by putting them through puberty blockers, hormones, and surgeries. If you are compassionate toward people with the trans issue, the psychological deformity or disorder that it is, you will recommend psychological therapy for them, not physical mutilation. And Joe Biden, who stole our holiday yesterday celebrating the risen Lord in order to do just the opposite, to recommend to young people that they undergo this bizarre combination of chemical and physical mutilation of their bodies that God created, Joe Biden can go directly to where I believe his life path has him headed anyway. I'm just going to recommend that he get there sooner. I'll be right
back. And the answer
All right, it sounds just like that. Reason in the age of unreason. It shouldn't be this difficult to get through this stuff, but yet here we are. So it's 11:36, our final segment. Appreciate you being with us. Let's get a couple of phone calls in here before we do anything else. I do want to talk to Seth for a moment here, but first, Todd in Ward 1 wants to talk about the Trans Day of Reality, which is something that I have decided to create. Hey, Todd, go ahead.
April 1st is the right day for that, Bob.
Yeah, you're right, it is.
Yep, I'm not trying to be funny at all. I'm going to repeat what I've been saying for years at this point. If we stop using the term transgender and replace it to a more accurate assessment of the facts, which is gender masking, which is not a derogatory term, then it draws up more questions and conversation about what does that mean to be masking your gender. And then it brings up more study on the actual process of conceiving a human being, the existence and the progression of a human being all the way through to becoming a corpse, and the understanding that it's your overall cellular makeup that defines your gender within 3 days of conception. And then you're dealing with facts of the matter of what I'm describing here. And then more people would understand that this term transgender should be eliminated from the public except for fiction, you know. But if you keep using it, however you may disbelieve that it is a true thing or not, it gives more energy to the people that claim that it is true. And these people did not hijack your people's day. They did not, because true believers of the Christian faith cannot be hijacked by this. It just didn't happen.
Well, two quick responses. You know, you started out by saying use gender masking, which is not insulting or discriminatory or whatever, offensive, however you said it.
Derogatory.
They would say it is. They would say it totally is, because you're saying, no. You're claiming I'm masking something which defies who I truly am. And don't you understand? Trans women are real women. Trans men are real men. That's their mantra. They're not masking what they are. They're just revealing what they really are. So they're gonna dismiss your idea right off the rip, because they're gonna say you're being derogatory, that you're being insulting, that you're being offensive. That's the real problem with this. Second thing I would say, go ahead. Do you have a response?
It's easier to have a conversation on the facts of the matter if you use that term versus using the term.
But you have to agree on what the facts are. Remember, they don't believe in the facts. They think men can get pregnant, so they don't believe in objectively true reality and facts. They think that men can get pregnant, that boys need tampon dispensers in their restrooms. So clearly, they're not interested in facts, Todd. You know this.
All I'm asking you to do at this point, Bob, is wrestle with it on your own. The value of using gender masking in place of using the term transgender.
Well, and I don't disagree with you. I'm just telling you, you're not going to get any more cooperation from them in the conversation by using it. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying you're not going to get it.
But I'm talking to you. Stop using the term. I'm not talking to them. I'm talking to you. You have to stop using the term, man, transgender, if you really want to get rid of this belief system that what they're saying is true.
Well, I think, I'll tell you what, rather than creating a term like gender masking, I would go back to the term that predates transgender, which is transsexual. You know, they don't like that idea because they want you to think that there's a difference between sex and gender. There's not. This is how they get away with their little fantasy world. But they used to call these people, you know, men who dressed as women and so forth, or especially if they thought they were women, transsexual. I'm not this sex, I'm that sex. But then they realized that bodily chromosomal science and anatomy and physiology and everything else prove that you are not a different sex. You are that sex. That's why they had to create the, well, in my head I'm not, so therefore it's my gender, and my gender is a psychological thing. It's not a physical
state of mind.
Thing. State of mind. So you can't change that, or you can change that. See, that's what I'm saying. So it doesn't matter what you use. They're going to change it, and they're going to use it to fit their agenda, regardless of what you say.
But if you stop using it, it will help. And I'm going to repeat the last thing that I said that you hadn't addressed yet. didn't your Christian holiday was not hijacked. It was, you can't hijack that.
Well, no, it isn't. It is, but in terms of attention, for example, anybody who went for just a real specific example here, Todd. Anybody who went to the White House Easter egg roll, which brings, you know, thousands of invited people every year. You know, if they come there and they find out that that religion is not welcome, that Christianity is not welcome at an Easter Day event, they're hijacking the religion. If they are making people pay attention with statements and proclamations in support of people's psychological disorders rather than recognizing the day that they're celebrating as holy, they're hijacking it. Not to the true believers. Those of us who believe, and we're going to continue to celebrate Easter as we want. But from the general recognition, we are a nation of recognition now. Do you know that? You know what this month is, Todd? I just found this out this morning because Seth only has one leg. I just found out this morning that there is a thing called, Seth, what is it? National Loss of Limb Day or Month?
What's it called? Loss of Limb and Limb Difference Day.
Yeah, Limb Loss and Limb Difference Day.
Month.
Month. Everybody has a recognition now, and if you don't get recognized, apparently it doesn't exist. So the idea that they wouldn't even recognize Christianity and Easter because they wanted to recognize instead transgender visibility or whatever is exactly that, an attempt to hijack the day from the people. And that's, you know, I'm not saying they're successful, but that's exactly what they tried to do.
Okay, Bob.
All right, brother.
Reference to Biden's statement about them being the more courageous people that he's ever known.
Yeah.
You can be a courageous, voluntary, ignorant fool. That does exist. All right, man.
Well done. Good job. Thank you. Appreciate it. Charlie in Brownhelm. Charlie, go ahead.
Hey, Bob. Interesting show. The last fellow, tomato, they'll change the term. You know, they'll just keep changing it. You just can't bend to that. But what you touched on a little earlier, I think, is really important. The gasoline that was thrown on this was the smartphone. The kids are seeing all this stuff we never saw, you know, the pornography, transsexual sex. We never saw this. Vivek Ramaswamy thinks that we should go back to the flip phone for kids. He wants to invest in companies that eliminate kids' ability to get on the Internet. They'll still have a phone. They'll still be able to talk to their parents, but they won't be able to get onto this Internet, which is destroying our culture.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.